Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to the latest Cyclone Fanatic podcast brought to you today by our good friends at Agrigold. Got a buddy of mine in today, Micah Byers from the basketball program. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
First podcast today?
First one of the day.
Yeah. 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 You're just sitting in there in the suit cup and you're just on with all the national guys 24/7.
You should see my lineup after this. Yeah. Full day of podcast. Yeah.
Jeff Goodman. Parrish just calling you up, I'm sure.
Doyle, all those guys, yeah.
Hey, no, I've been wanting to do this for a really long time, and it's I was doing a little bit of research. I know a lot about you and in your career and your past, but you're going into your sixth season, right?
Correct.
So you're 5-for-5 on NCAA tournaments.
We are, yes.
No, it's all Iowa State hadn't gone to an NCAA tournament since like this year two of Wayne Morgan. And then you get to town, and it's 5 straight.
Yeah,
it's not a coincidence.
No, well, it's been a blessing, and it is kind of a coincidence. But it's fun to be a part of a run like this.
Well, it's been awesome to watch, and I know. Actually, let's just rewind. I want people to know a little bit about you before we get into what you do.
Okay.
Every day at Iowa State, but you have a fascinating background, and I know you get probably annoyed with people talking to you about your Florida football days.
No, never.
But
never.
Because you played for Spurrier, right?
Correct.
That is an iconic guy.
Yeah.
In the world of college sports.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your background with Florida.
Well, I had the opportunity when I was in high school. I went to a smaller high school, so it was kind of like the high school that used to be affiliated with UNI. On the campus of UNI. So yeah. Mine was on the campus of the University of Florida. So lifelong Gator fan growing up in Gainesville, had the opportunity to go to Georgia Southern at the time, was a powerhouse in the lower level NCAA. And so at the last minute, I had a chance to go to the University of Florida and walk on. I didn't quite know what I was getting myself into, because when you go to a high school of my size, you're always the biggest, fastest, strongest, and then you get out there and you look at the depth chart and you have to flip it around and see if your name's on the back, but it's not even on the back, just because there's so many high-level athletes. But it was a great learning experience for me, because we had great coaches. Charlie Strong was a defensive line coach there, and Ron Zook was my position coach, who went on to coach the University of Florida and Illinois and make stops in the pros. Bob Pruitt was the defensive coordinator when I was there, who left and went to Marshall.
Okay.
So we were at a time when they were winning championships that I was a part of it. I did get to see a lot of really good coaches. But Coach Spurrier is completely and utterly unique in that he says in the pre-Twitter and social media world, he said what he thought at all times, whether we were good or bad.
Yeah.
He told us, and it was refreshing, but, you kind of got numb to it and thought that that's how it was. And then you step into the world, the coaching world yourself, and you realize that everybody isn't as open as he is. But it was definitely a great experience to be out there with that quality of athlete, but then also, with a coaching staff of that caliber.
Who are some of the, legendary Gators that you played with?
Besides myself.
Yeah, besides you, obviously. You overshadowed all those guys.
I did, to my mother. But no, Danny Warfel.
Okay, you were there for Warfel. Okay.
I was there with Warfel, Heisman Trophy winner. The older I get, people see my bio and they think that I played with Tebow. I never correct them, because it helps place me in a younger demographic. But, I was there with Tebow, and Chris Doering was actually a high school teammate of mine, and he's still, I believe, the SEC all-time leader in touchdown receptions, because he stayed for 4 years.
Okay.
He started as a walk-on. I believe he has 31 touchdowns, I think, in the SEC, which I believe is still the leader. But Reed L. Anthony, Ike Hilliard, people of a certain age group will remember those guys from video games. They
Absolutely.
Were just the little streaks that used to run by everybody.
Ike Hilliard's a longtime Giant, is that
correct? Yeah, correct. And I believe he's an NFL coach right now. Actually a buddy of mine who people may or may not know, Terry Jackson, was the starting fullback. He backed up Fred Taylor, who was the starting running back on that
team.
Man,
you were there during the glory years.
Yes, yeah. I was blessed, because I was there. We had a 24-person class, and Travis McGriff was there. That a lot of people remember him, was the diminutive wide receiver who had some fame later on in his career. But there were 24 people in our class, and I was the one preferred walk-on. So it was fun to kind of be a part of that. And we were all together, and everybody was equal until we put on pads and actually started doing things. And then I was number 24. it was definitely a great experience. It was really fun.
Well, that's quite that. And our demographic of people who listen to this podcast, that's going to stand out, because that was when a lot of guys in our 30s Man, that was like the prime of when you're very impressionable, right? and you're watching. Did you? I'm trying to think of what bowl games you guys would have gone to when you were there. Did you play for a national title?
Yeah. So this really dates me, and it's hard because my freshman year was the last year that there were ties. And to a certain demographic that listens to this, they'll say, yep, you only tie and you draw in soccer. But, you know, in the early 90s, you know, right until 1994, there were ties before they went to the current format with the overtime rules. But we actually tied Florida State the last regular season game of the season. The choke at Doak is what Florida State fans call it. We just call it the tie. but we tied them, and then we did go on to win the SEC championship against Alabama 24-23 that season. But then we drew Florida State in a bowl game.
Man, I remember that.
And went on to lose it wasn't a huge margin, but on the field, watching it, you could tell they had some pent-up anger and aggression from tying, because they came all the way back, tied us at the very end, and they probably should have gone for two, but they didn't. But then the next year,
Bobby Bowden's a chicken, man.
He was, and luckily he didn't. Otherwise, it would have been one of the greatest comebacks of all time had he, you know, gone for two. But then the next year, which was kind of a blur, it was the first time that Florida had ever gone undefeated in the regular season, and we won the SEC championship against Arkansas, and then we ran into the other iconic Midwestern team,
Were you on that team that
Nebraska
lost to the U?
No, that was okay. later on. But so we ran in Nebraska with Tommy Frazier and the Peter brothers and Lawrence Phillips and anybody else that took a large amount of steroids at the time that was enrolled in college there in Nebraska. But it was it started off great. It started off really, really well for us, and then it just went downhill. One quick side note is, you know, maybe some of your listeners will appreciate this, is that Coach Spurrier never did the shotgun. And if you look back at any of the earlier films, everything was underneath center.
Yeah.
And until that game, they blitzed us, and he still put Danny underneath center, and we just got crushed. And then later on the next season is when he went to the shotgun.
Wow,
because
really?
He felt like that the quarterback would be taking his eyes off the defense if he was waiting for a snap to come. But then, as you know, you can tell now, it hasn't really affected guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and those guys. But he was an early adopter to the open passing game, but he liked his quarterback being under center. So
that's fascinating. That Nebraska team that you talk about growing up where I did it, I was just so skewed to it, and you know, maybe I was just brainwashed as a kid, but how good was that team though?
Amazing.
I mean, that's one of the best teams ever, don't you think?
Well, when you see him come out you know, to warm up, we were on the field and we go, guys, they're really not that big, you know. You psych yourself up, and there wasn't as much, you know, it was the national championship game, and we just happened to be paired against one another in the Fiesta Bowl. You know, we got lucky.
Yeah.
You know, some years, at that time.
That system was so messed up.
But, you know, it worked out that year, and we go, guys, they're not that big. They're not that fast. And then we realized they turned around, and the guys had position. We thought that was their offensive line, and they were the position players, the wide receivers and the quarterbacks. Then their offensive line and defensive line trotted out, and we realized that they were the real deal, what everyone said they were.
Oh,
so,
man.
It was amazing. And then Tommy Frazier, filled with anger from being passed over at Florida, because we had a passing style, and then he was a running quarterback out of Bradenton, Florida. So
he
let us know that we probably made a mistake by not recruiting him.
Eddie George needs to give that Heisman back.
Yeah, it was.
There's no reason Tommy Frazier shouldn't have won the Heisman.
Agreed.
Now, a lot of Iowa State fans will also point out that Danny Werfel did not deserve the Heisman over Troy Davis.
Right. Yeah. And
you have a dog in the fight there.
You know, I'm happy for my alma mater, and I'm happy for the school that I work at. I haven't gotten a chance to meet Troy, although I did watch him in high school because he and his brother played down in Miami. So I did get to see them, and there's no doubting that he was an amazing, you know, player at the time. You know, Mike Green in the sports, I feel like he has a one-man crusade against Danny Werfel's a heck of a guy. You know, it's tough to take it away. If it were some, you know,
that's vintage Beaner right there.
If it was a renegade, if there was some renegade player that had it, I might be, you know, might side with him more. But I think Beaner still has a one-man crusade against that that Heisman winner.
It's understandable. You know, Iowa State doesn't have the greatest football tradition. That's
right.
The one Heisman that we should have, Micah.
Right.
Man, that's fascinating. I could probably do this 90s college football talk with you for well, I got one more, though.
Yeah.
The last Florida Gator who I interviewed was Senator Marco Rubio.
Oh, okay.
Not too long. It was during the campaign. He was on our show.
Right.
And he made national news by dogging Florida State.
Right.
I think the direct quote, and it ended up on CNN and Fox News and all that stuff, was the only reason Florida State exists is for people who weren't smart enough to get into Florida.
Right.
Do you have that type of feelings towards Florida State?
When you were lucky enough to beat them, of which we did, and we lost to them in the regular season finale of 96, but then the same anger that they beat us in the bowl game with, and at the conclusion of the 94 season, we took it out on them 52-20, I believe, in the national championship game later on in 96. So it always interests me. You know, fans seem to harbor a lot of hatred towards one another, and and players do go back and forth, and you see it with our guys too, you know, with our rivals. But truthfully, these guys, and we had the opportunity, not me, to be on the field and actually play against one another. So it wanes over time because you know that we're actually going to have the chance. With fans, it's just kind of, 365, I dislike you, your school, everybody would say, Florida State has a clown college, which they actually do, and I'm not
seriously?
Making – Yeah, no, they actually do, like, where people go
to learn how to learn. Be clowns.
Yeah, yeah, which I'm sure it's probably lucrative because they've had it for a long time, and it was a girls' college or a women's college, so there
You just totally broke that news to me.
There are
That's
some –
That's fascinating.
Yeah, but you can't deny, they have a history with, in college basketball, and they, of course, their baseball and football, history is very good as well. But you can't deny that they do have a clown college.
It's a 4-year degree to become a clown.
I don't know if you could spend that much time in that field or
not. Can you expedite that? At least get an associate's in clown college? Or
it probably depends on what circus is coming through the local area or not. But they do offer that degree. I don't want to – I'm sure people can, get on the web and find out.
Do you know how many people are Googling this right now?
Have at it. Have at it. Yeah, I'm sure the enrollment – I'm sure it's probably a difficult program to get into. It's been around for a long time. So.
The prestigious clown college at the Florida State University. All right. Let's go to your time at Iowa State. You came in here under Fred Hoiberg. Now, I believe you and T.J. Otzelberger had worked together at Chipola before that, correct?
Right.
So that was kind of your in to Iowa State. Now you've been here 5 years underneath a couple of coaches.
Yes.
Broad question for you first. Give us Micah Byers' impression of Ames and Iowa State the day you got here compared to what it is right now, you've seen this growth.
Well, TJ, of course, as everyone knows, is an awesome salesman.
And
even though he was a friend of mine, it was funny because he was here during some, lean times, and it was we worked together at Chipola Junior College, in which we coached Mike Taylor, who ended up here. And so I followed, I was at University of Central Florida at the time, so I followed Iowa State because, of the level and because of, TJ as a friend and then Mike Taylor having played here. So I don't think they probably won as much as TJ wanted to in those early years, but he was also, learning and becoming the recruiter and coach that he is today. But I don't think when TJ was recruiting me to come here and selling my wife on it that he recalled all of the times when he would call me in February and January when the conference season was, kind of going downhill, and he would say, man, we lost a close one last night. It was 8 at halftime. It was 28. He would say that, and then he would mention things that, as a Florida native, from myself and my wife, both Florida natives, he would say things that were completely foreign to me, like the snow is up to my windowsill, which that didn't really resonate with me.
Wind chill.
He would say these things. And then as soon as a job opportunity came open, he said, man, Ames is the greatest place on earth. But I don't know that he recalled that he, told me those stories before. But TJ did. I flew into the Des Moines airport. I had a good job at the University of Central Florida. I was retained by the new coaching staff there for 1 year. And we had probably, we had some success that Central Florida, the University of Central Florida hasn't had, and we got to postseason play. And so I had a good job in a good place in my wife's hometown and my home state. And then, TJ presented this opportunity and just told me about Fred. And I did have a chance to meet Fred and Carol at the Final Four in Houston.
Okay.
And we hit it off, of course, like everybody. I don't know if I developed my crush for Fred then or if it was later, but, it definitely sparked it.
The crush for Fred, I speak for all of us when I say it burns over time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it makes you any less of a I won't even say man or woman less of a person because you're just enamored with him. I mean, he could coach at Iowa and everybody go, it's still Fred. Maybe.
Well, okay.
Maybe.
Let's
okay, we'll
to,
time out.
The breaks there
okay.
for a second.
Okay.
We'll
go back
kill
on that.
Kill this podcast now.
So I had a chance to talk to TJ and he said, come on out. And so I landed at the Des Moines airport. I'd been actually the first Division I game that I ever coached in back in 2001 was at at Carver Hawkeye Arena against Boston University.
Really?
Old Guardians Classic.
Wow.
And so my first taste
Small
of
world.
Division I basketball was actually in Iowa, but the weather was pretty good. It was early in November, so we played, of course, you know, all of us from, you know, New Orleans thought it was freezing.
Yeah.
We played the game, and then it's just – we played, you know, hundreds of games since then. But stepped off the plane in Des Moines, and I told my wife – I did make this pact with her. I said, I'm not going to call you during this visit because I don't want you to get jaded by my momentary, you know, oh, this is great. Oh, this is not great. This is not what we like. Because the hardest thing whenever you move is you try to, you know, simulate exactly where you came from, and that's impossible. And it's not fair to the place that you're at, and it's not fair to the place that you're going. So when I got off the plane, you know, TJ picked me up, and he said, hey, we're gonna head to the Drake Relays, which, you know, I've seen it on television, but, you know, you've never been before, mm-hmm. you know, in person. And then I go and had a great time there at the Drake Relays. We were actually on the oval as Lolo Jones ran. It felt like it was very scripted, and knowing TJ, I didn't know that it wasn't. You know, he got me there. We were with
him. Had it all set up.
We watched Lolo Jones run. We came back, we saw the offices at Sukup, and then I did actually, I did call my wife, and she said, is something wrong? You know, I called her later that day. She says, something wrong? And I go, no, I just want to let you know it's 10 times better than I ever thought it would be. You know, my scope of aims was essentially Sukup and the Hilton Garden Inn across the street from it. But growing up in a college town, I knew what we were getting into. But you could kind of get the feel, you know, after you met some of the players. You know, at that time, we had Chris Allen and mm-hmm. Chris Babb and Royce and those guys. And Will Clyburn was actually, you know, coming in at that mm-hmm. time, and Corey Lucius. So there was a different type of player. We maybe had one guy like that at Central Florida or any of the other stops that I had been a part of. But when you start to see the accumulation of talent and the type, you know, the type of players that those guys could be.
Yeah.
For us. And then once you sit there and talk basketball with Fred, after you peel yourself off your seat, you know, after he eviscerates you with his knowledge, you know, it just lets you know that it's heading in the right direction. And then, you know, Matt was on the staff, and getting a chance to meet Cornell, but it worked out really well. But my initial impression was, hopefully it's not great, because then we can stay in Florida, but it's been the best thing for myself career wise but also for my family, because they really do enjoy it here.
Well, it's a small world. Your first game at Carver Hawkeye in front of the hundreds of people that watched the Hawkeyes home games, and then now you're at the cathedral that is Hilton Coliseum every night.
Absolutely.
I say that in jest, mm-hmm. however I lead it up to a very serious point, just mm-hmm. how one thing I've noticed over 10, 11 years of doing this is the intensity of Hilton in, like, the non-conference game. So it used to be in the day, like, nobody would really show up. I mean, you would have 5,000 people there tonight, maybe 10, I don't know.
Right.
But now it's like there's almost that Big 12 atmosphere if Chicago State's in town.
Right.
And I've seen that just since you've been here, too.
Right.
Like, even Fred's first couple years, even the Royce year, it was exciting, non-conference games, but it was nothing like what we saw last year.
Yeah, I think my first taste of that, well, quick point is when my very first game was an exhibition game, of course, and we walk out on the floor, and TJ looked up into the stands, and he goes, man, can you believe this? And I was like, I can't believe there's 8,000 people here. I'm coming from the University of Central Florida, where we had a 10,000-seat arena where everybody constantly said, you know, when the Memphises of the world or UTEPs would come in, that we were going to sell out, but it never got to that point. So if you draw 8,000 in Central Florida, you're doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
And we walk out there, and there's 8,000 people, and he's like, don't worry, it gets better than this. And I was like, man, if it's never better than this, it's great.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that you ask for early, and then once you see what it's like when it's, you know, when it's filled to capacity. But I think my first taste of that was probably the Northern Illinois game when we came back from Hawaii.
Yep.
And, you know, just the buzz that was created during that 3-day, you know, the 3-game run that we had out there, and then the winning streak. And of course,
that was your last non-con of that year.
Correct.
Right?
And, you know, it kind of coincided with the Johnny Orr passing and everything.
It's on New Year's Eve.
Yeah. So all of that kind of happened. And then I think there was the newness of being ranked and seeing the team for the first time, because I don't believe maybe we had played a non-conference game after we had beaten Iowa and then played one more and then went on that trip. And we had the UNI game,
mm-hmm.
the comeback. After we kind of
you were down like 19,
So that was people's first, and you know, just to come back, because again, we're used to playing against for 3 days, we had a decent showing out in Hawaii. But again, you know, it's Hawaii, so you knew that there weren't, you know, wasn't going to be overwhelming cyclones. But then to come back and see the reaction, the atmosphere that we had, and then now it's just built up, you know, steadily each year that, you know, games that people may not think are marquee home games are actually the ones that are probably the more difficult ones to get in. Because I've seen situations where people would say, you know, last year, for example, what's just Chattanooga? But everyone's saying it's just Chattanooga, and then you have 14,000 people saying it's just Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. You know, so it does.
And then you see them in the tournament.
Correct. Yeah.
And then Buffalo.
Yeah.
A lot of times, like these non-conference games, I'll try and point out, like, you know, this is a pretty good team. I remember just a few years back, I think it was when you had like Southern, right? I mean, that was a team with like two potential NBA type guys. A lot of these teams, like, you don't know who they are, but like Chattanooga was a sexy pick to make it to the Sweet 16 by some people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, and some of that goes to, with some of those teams, they have their budget so predicated on the non-conference games that those guys, you know, making money playing by games, that they're on the road 8-10 games and they don't really find themselves until they get home and get into their conference season where they're playing two home games and then a road game. So, you know, but Southern did. They turned it around. And even the year, I believe it was the year that Missouri lost to with
Norfolk State.
Yeah. And, you know, those guys, you know, teams.
Am I thinking of the right
one? Yeah, I think so. It
was in the NCAA tournament, the 15-2.
Yeah. I just remember I had
Norfolk State, Adam Gray says yes.
Built up a little disdain for those guys after they won. That was the first Big 12 championship I was ever a part of. And so just so people can know where my allegiance lies, that Missouri won that championship and they held up those SEC signs. Do you recall that? Have you ever seen the Kim English holding up those signs? So Kim English.
We don't like Kim English.
Well, you know.
I don't.
I'm
speaking for me, not Micah.
But just, you know, but some of those teams, you know, they find themselves after they play, you know, have an opportunity to get those guarantee games out of their way. But, yeah.
Can we go to scheduling? It's a huge it's a huge part of what Micah does on a daily basis. And it's, you know, this is a deal where I think it's incredibly difficult for fans to really understand the nuance that goes into this. As far as matching dates go, a lot of people, they'll just, well, why can't you play Duke? You know, why Duke home and home? Let's go to Cameron Indoor.
Right.
Can you explain why that's difficult? Like, why it's not as easy to just schedule, like, these high major games like that as a lot of people think?
Well, I just wanted to be clear that I only do the schedules that people like. I'm only in charge of doing the schedule the years that people enjoy the non-conference games. But you know, it is difficult putting together a schedule because you are sometimes scheduling, you know, 2 and 3 years out, and you know, so aligning yourself with a team who may have a high RPI or may, you know, be that, you know, sexy team coming off an NCAA tournament, you know, 1 year removed, that's the beauty of college basketball, is it takes one or two players, like a DeAndre Kane being added to a team that people thought was the ninth best team in the league, us. You add DeAndre, and then, of course, you know, the other guys mature and get better. But, you know, you never know. One or two players can skew, you know, how good a team is. And if they truly don't have that, you know, that the pedigree or maybe even a football name behind them, it makes it harder for that name to resonate with the fan base. And look, I'm a fan as well. I would like nothing more than to line up all of these teams that just, you know, that don't have state behind them, you know, or don't have some other designation.
The non-directionals.
You know, that don't have a designation like that. However, you know, some of it comes down to just figuring out exactly when people are available. But it's also scheduling games to prepare you for certain styles of play prior to going to multi-team events, or, you know, before you're getting ready to play Iowa or any of your other, you know, non-conference games. You know, not that those teams, that you can ever take any of them for granted, because the one thing that does come with having an awesome atmosphere at, like, Hilton, is that everybody that plays us, they're playing us because they want to come in and knock off that Goliath. They want to be the lead in the sports center with a silent 14,000, you know, people.
Absolutely.
There. So, you know, so you do have to factor that in a little bit, but we do a lot of research, you know, myself, and, you know, it's truly a team effort. I am the point person for a lot of it, but we use a lot of software. You know, we have a software called WinAD, and we use Synergy. So essentially, we scout these teams and look at their personnel and see who they're returning, because some people, you know, just like, you know, the deadline, with the deadline being, and it hasn't happened this year, but, you know, just figuring out who's returning on teams, who they have sitting out, who they've stashed away. But it's so much of it's really truly predicated on what dates are available for you. And sometimes Hilton isn't available, and sometimes we just can't go on the road. Just a quick example is, you know, the first 2 years we played in the Big 12 SEC, everybody's jazzed up. You get Auburn coming in, you know, whether or not that, but it's a name.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And they're in the SEC and
high major.
Correct. And it matters that, you know, we're playing against the, you know, it's our conference versus another conference, and we come in and we were able to beat those guys. And then the next year we had the opportunity to either host or to go on the road, and it somehow it came down to us, you know, hosting again. So you get Arkansas. Well, what you forget, and you know, you don't forget it, but you know, you're really excited with the present is, oh, that's right, we have to go on the road twice, you mm-hmm. know, the following year. So by having to go on the road twice and then having the Iowa game on the road, sometimes it just makes it a little more difficult to get a marquee game at home, because you already have multiple marquee games on the road, and then you start bringing it in. You don't want to wear your guys out, because the one trump card in all of this is that you do have the Big 12 conference schedule, and that may not be what people want to hear, but the truth is that when you're sitting there in mid-January, and it happens to all 10 teams in the league, I guarantee you, from Kansas all the way down to whomever, that we all look at our schedule. It hasn't, not one time in the history of a college conference schedule, someone not looked at it and go, man, we're getting screwed. How in the world are we supposed to win those four games? And so it's going to happen to us in June or July, whenever that schedule gets put out, and everybody go, they got us on the road the first game. Or somebody's going to go, we have to play KU at home first.
Yeah.
You know, they're putting us behind the eight ball. But when you look at that conference schedule, that's really what has pushed, I feel like, our league into the next stratosphere as far as, you know, doing well in the NCAA tournament, is just because we have so many good teams. And even the teams that are the ones that haven't been as successful, wins and losses, you can see with the Texas Tech, that you're right there on the verge, you know, just with getting some experience to being, you know, close to being an NCAA quality team.
I would think too that so you've got an 18 game schedule, which is, that's a lot of conference games in the whole scheme of things. You've got the locked in Big Four Classic, you know, you get to play Iowa every year. You've got to find a certain number of home games as well. So I would imagine, I mean, if you combine all of that, plus, and this, I'd like your input on this, Hilton's revered as one of the top 5-10 toughest places to play in college basketball. There are not a lot of schools that are willing to sign up for that in the non-conference. It makes your job more difficult, I would imagine.
It does, and, you know, it's part of the allure is finding those teams that strike that balance between you know, I'll be honest with you, a name, a competitiveness, but then someone that's also willing to come. I can't tell you how many times, you know, during the scheduling is my recruiting. You know, anybody would be foolish to think that just because, you know, and this isn't in it, you know, saying that anything, you know, crazy is happening with recruiting, but you just don't stop. You know, hey, the 2016 class is set. Well, it's never set until they're here and you're going, and then you're moving forward to 17. For us, you know, for me, scheduling never stops. So I'm constantly looking, you know, for games and times to match up, but it happens so often that, you know, we'll get an opponent that fits the bill, that may even be willing to come into Hilton, that has a name, or wanting to do a home and home, and then we look, and because of a multi-team event that we're playing in or that they're playing in, and there's certain rules within the multi-team events, you know, for example, like the seven other teams that we're in the Orlando Classic with, we can play one of them in an extra game, but it has to fall within a 14-day window. And now you hear that, and there may not be arena availability for us. There may not be arena availability for them. We may have something on the 15th day. And it's just, you know, when the schedule's all put together, you kind of sit back and exhale. But there is a lot of moving parts to it. And again, I know no one feels sorry because, you know, for me or for, you know, for us doing this. But it is it's a difficult task. But, I mean, it's definitely something we're up to. And, you know, I think each schedule that we've had has prepared us to get to that level where we're competitive in the Big 12. And I don't feel like we've had one yet that, you know, has been to our detriment where anyone's sitting there on Selection Sunday. Now, we've been blessed a couple times to just get pushed right in by winning the Big 12 championship, which I would suggest we just do that every year because it makes it much easier. But
and it's so much fun in Kansas City.
It is.
I don't care what anybody says.
No, that's amazing. But, yeah, just piecing that together, again, it's a challenge, but it's fun. And I think between our administration, Jamie, you know, Coach Hoiberg before and Coach Prohm, we want to play as competitive as we can. But, again, there are some limitations to what we can do based on dates.
How much do you schedule based off of what you think you have coming back?
You know, that's definitely a part of it. You know, when you're looking out there, you know, sometimes we've even tried to do things where we've matched up, you know, guys like, you know, hey, this guy, they have a person coming back that's similar to a George, or didn't get to happen with DeAndre because we didn't know, you know, that he was coming. But, you know, we've tried to find some matchups, you know, for guys based on personnel. But then we also, you know, definitely, you know, try to make that, you know, be a factor. But again, there's just so many pieces,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Just so many pieces. But again, all of those things that we've touched on, you know, that ultimately comes out in your schedule, and you just hope that you've put your team and your program in the best, you know, position to be successful.
I know, like, with football, this happens all the time because they're basically creating games for television.
Right.
You see that in the first couple of weeks, all those neutral court games. How much does that happen in basketball?
It's become the new thing. If we played for the folks out there that want us to play the Dukes, Gonzagas, you know, all those marquee non-conference games, those games are with third party, you know, whatever their interests are, setting these events up, you know, in a at the United Center or at the, you know, in Atlanta. Now,
I wish they did that with Duke
before
you were here.
Yes, and people, that is the new thing because a lot of people, it alleviates, you know, some people would say, hey, we won't go on the road, but we'll play you neutral. But for us, with all of our neutral games, you know, just this year, for example, our three in the multi-team event in Orlando, away to Iowa, away to Vandy, neutral to, you know, to Drake, I'm sorry. So that's six of those. You know, if we start to add another one, now we're doing it and losing games at Hilton, which you can't do for the fans, for us. Because we need to get acclimated and get used to playing in that environment.
Just so, financially, too, with
correct.
The athletic department.
Correct. So, but that is the new big thing. I mean, if we took people up on every one of those that were offered, man, our schedule would be amazing. No one would ever see us at Hilton, but we would be playing, you know, we'd be playing the Blue Bloods of, our non-conference schedule would just line up there with everybody.
You'd have one of those swag schedules where they don't play at home until like January.
We may open up at home on November 11th. And then they'd see us again for the home opener of Big 12 play. But that is the new big thing. And there's so many people that are offering those. There's some financial incentives to them. And then, you know, just for bringing names in. But, you know, not many people draw large numbers at those events. But they're all trying to pair people up to keep people away from – because people are scared of the away games. And that's where they feel like the middle ground is having that neutral site game. And it is attractive, but you just have to be very careful how you do it because – we do have the uniqueness of having the Big Four Classic, and you don't ever want to dilute that.
Yeah. How did the Iowa getting moved to a Thursday thing work? Was that ESPN's idea?
It was. And, you know, for us, when they came to us, I don't think it's, you know, any secret. They came to us and told us, I believe, 2 years ago when we had the really good game, DeAndre Kane's year.
Yeah, that was a great game.
It was an amazing game, and that game was on ESPN2. Right,
I believe so.
And then I think it was like an 8:30. It was an
odd
U,
one of
or the
two.
U or one of those. And and so what they when we were going forward, you know, for a home Iowa State game, when we were dealing with the ESPN folks, just on multiple fronts, on, you know, the Big 12, SEC, they don't dictate what we do, but they definitely like to, you know, understand what's going on. And so just in other discussions, they brought it to our attention that even though we view it as a big game locally, you know, in Ames, and they do in Iowa City, and then, you know, within the state, it's a big game, but they made mention that nationally, if we were to move it to a Thursday, that it would be able to get more of a national scope. Now, they didn't guarantee ESPN or the U or 2, but they said it would probably be on either, you know, ESPNU or ESPN2, and I think because of the quality of the games and the personalities that were in it, I think that they would prefer us to play on that Thursday so that we're not going up against football on Fridays.
I tell you what, man, like that moving that game to a Thursday is one of my favorite things I've ever seen happen.
Right.
That having that on a Friday night has driven me crazy for so long.
Right.
And I've understood like it's something to do with Iowa's finals, which was why, but like not only are you competing against first of all, if you look at television ratings up and down the board, there's not many people watching TV at prime time on a Friday night. It just doesn't happen. But two, our state is so big in high school sports, too. You're also competing with that. And a lot of people, you know, there's Christmas parties going on at that time of year.
Right.
On a Thursday night, man, like that was such a big deal last year. I love the move.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, I think that was really big for us. I think, you know, there were some people that were disgruntled because they had gotten used to having it on the Friday. But for as far as exposure is concerned and the way, you know, that we decided to go forward here for the next, you know, for the 4 years, I think that I think it'll be good for us. And I think it'll grow the rivalry because it'll allow people nationally, you know, to see it. And it's a good product. I mean, there's an intensity to that game, you know, that you don't get in every, you know, in every interstate, you know, game, you know, against opponents. Because like, we're so evenly matched and these guys know each other and we're so close, you know, proximity to one another. So.
Absolutely. Real quick about the transition. I wanted to, from Coach Hoiberg to Coach Prohm.
Yeah.
That I do... You always say, don't feel bad for us and all this stuff. You've said it all.
Right.
I always feel bad for assistant coaches, though, when one coach leaves.
Right.
because you guys are just totally left in limbo.
Yeah.
An assistant coach in anything in college sports, it's a very rewarding lifestyle, but it can be very hectic and stressful too, I know, because you're moving around the country constantly.
Right.
What was that like? Just the transition period? Because the Hoiberg watch 2016 that we were doing last year,
right.
I mean, it was stressful for everybody. I can't imagine knowing that my job could be up in the air.
Yeah.
So walk us through what that was like for you with the Chicago Bulls rumors. It happens. Prohm gets hired and then waiting to see if you are retained.
Yeah. So, you know, all of that, you know, there were always murmurings that Fred wanted to, you know, move on to the professional ranks at some point. I mean, that's where, you know, he cut his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody here locally sees him as the four-year Iowa guy and that he's from Ames, you know, from Ames area. But the truth is that anyone that plays in the league for 10 years and then has front office experience, that's the, you know, the majority of what their, you know, professional life, you know, has been. So, it was, you know, it was known. And so you come into this opportunity knowing that, hey, you have a chance to do something special in college. But if Fred leaves, you know, he leaves and you just go through it. But again, the finality of it, you know, doesn't really strike you until it, you know, until it is upon you. So with Fred's, it was a unique situation. Again, Fred's had some things in his life happen that, you know, may, not that the heart surgery is a blessing, but because of the heart surgery, he wasn't as accessible and he was recovering.
Yep.
I mean, it was real. And, but you know, the one thing he did do while he was down was he did continue to operate, you know, and talk through, you know, assistance on our staff. And we try to keep it going as much as possible. The thing with Fred is that he's so honest and he cares about the program so much that if it would have been someone different, I could see them easily that may not have the connections to Ames just saying, oh, yes, I'm 100% coming back.
Yeah.
You know, it made recruiting was difficult at the time. But when you look at it, you know, in hindsight, maybe we shouldn't have, you know, told people that Fred was coming back, which he was honest and open about. And it's probably the program is probably better off for not, you know, being dishonest, you know, to your student athletes, because then you're starting your relationship off with someone, you know, with a lie, which is, you know, which is never helpful. But, you know, so Fred's heart surgery, you know, he's recovering from that. And, you know, and then I never had been much of an NBA fan, you know, growing up in Florida, you know, the Magic were good and I watched them, but I was a little older when they came. But then all of a sudden I find myself riveted by these Chicago Bulls games. And then you start to think in your mind, you know, how far would they have to advance for Fred not to go? Because you start to think about the finality of being, you know, being here.
I wrote that column. Like, how can you fire Thibodeau if he takes him to the NBA Finals?
And like, that's what my wife's sitting there, and she's like, why are you so intently watching this? Because you don't want to involve so many people. You don't want to make anyone feel sorry for you. No one should. We have a great life, and we get to do exactly what we want. But we're, you know, we're human beings, and we have families, and, you know, you don't want to uproot them. So the, you know, the time comes that, you know, the Bulls lose, and then we're actually playing in the Cyclone Sports Property golf tournament, and we came around the, you know, the 10th tee, and it had been announced, and that tee was supposed to be the party, the party tee box. And somebody gets on the microphone and they go, Tom Thibodeau has been released from his, you know. And so at that point you started to know that things were going to fall in line, and it was just interesting to see everything happen, you know, piece by piece, because you kind of could foresee it, but then when it's actually falling into place, it's becoming different. So I was actually downstairs at Fong's Pizza. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
Fong's
Pizza. You can say that.
With my family eating, and Fred called me on the phone, and he goes, Micah, you know, the Chicago Bulls thing came up, and I think I'm going to take it.
Shocking.
And I was like, are you serious? The Bulls? And, but no, he was great. You know, he did keep in touch with us, you know, as much as anyone could during a time like that, because some of the things you do have to play close to the vest.
Absolutely.
And that's part of being the head coach, and that's part of, you know, but he did his best to keep the program together. You know, while he was still here, but then he took that job. And so, you know, now you're in this time of limbo where a new person is coming in. And, you know, for me, I feel like I had a good rapport with our athletes and the coaching staff and the administration, but that's no guarantee, you know, that you're going to be able to stay, because at the end of everything, you know, they have to do what's best, you know, for the program going forward. And when I can say that now, sitting here almost a year removed from it, but it was a stressful time. It was a stressful time as a coach, as a parent, as a husband. But that's, you know, that's kind of what you're, you know, what you get into when you do this. The one unique factor to this was that we had been a successful program, and now there was a new coach coming in. Normally, people come in and they have this clean house mentality because you haven't been as successful. But when Coach Prohm came in, it was funny because I knew Steve. from working camps together.
Okay.
You know, many years
ago. I didn't know that.
There was once a camp, believe it or not, where Shaka Smart, Steve Prohm, and Micah Byers were all together. And,
nice.
And if you would have told me
that
two of the three of us would be in the Big 12 at some point as head coaches, I'd be like, man, where am I coaching?
You got Micah name dropping, yeah. Danny Warfel, got Shaka Smart into the mix now.
Yeah. So I knew
friend Tommy Frazier.
Yes. So I knew Steve and had a background with him, and they were actually in the NCAA tournament, you know, my first year here.
Yeah.
In Louisville. So
they were like that trendy upset pick.
They
there.
Were.
Yeah,
they
everybody
were.
Loved Murray that year.
So, you know, I knew Steve, and it was interesting. You know, Steve gets hired, and he comes in. You know, this is prior to his press conference at Sukup, and I just remember seeing him come in, and he kind of had that same look in his eyes that I did, because, you know, when you leave a place that you're loved and you appreciate, like he did Murray, like I did at Central Florida, you know, he had taken the job, and he was sitting on my couch, and I just remember him saying, man, tell me about this job. You know, the same way that I was kind of like TJ Fred, you know, tell me about this place, because it's one thing when you're going through the interview process, but then when you're actually there and you're sitting in the office, it's going to be your office, the facility that's now your facility. You look at Hilton Coliseum and it's probably different than, you know, where Murray plays. And, you know, we had a good talk that night, and I just told him about the athletes that we had coming back. And, you know, the one thing that everybody says about Iowa is the people are great. But again, I told him, I said, everyone's going to tell you that. And then you're going to be here for a while, and you're going to experience it, and then you're going to know what everyone, you know, what everyone's saying. But
yeah.
it was just a unique time, and then some, you know, some days passed, and you know, he met with the players individually and met with some coaching staff, and then I think one thing he did do was make sure that all of his folks back at Murray were taken care of before he addressed any of our job situations, which mm-hmm. I thought was admirable. I say that now, I was sweating a lot more, you know, about
yeah.
a year ago,
yeah.
But you know, that's, you know, the testament to what kind of person, you know, Steve is. He made sure all of his other staff was taken care of, and then he started to talk with us, and, you know, he made his decisions, and, you know, it wasn't hard for me. There wasn't any, you know, bartering back and forth. It was like, would you like to stay? And I'm like, absolutely. And not just, you know, we knew we had good players coming back, but, you know, I had known George and Naz and all of these guys for the duration of their career. And it's a special place to live with your family, but it's also a special place to be able to coach, and
yeah.
a special administration. And I tell, you know, from the compliance part department to, you know, to the upper level administrators, you know, everyone is easy to work with. So it's fun. You know, if it was a place that was constantly breathing down your neck, it would be a little harder, you know, to stick
Understood.
Around. But yeah, it was an interesting carousel, but it had a pretty good ending, I think.
A couple of your former colleagues went with Fred to the Bulls, and
yeah.
Charlie and Nate Linzer,
yeah.
who I know you worked incredibly close to.
Yeah.
Did you, is there any, like, then was there any aspiration for you to try and go to the Bulls with Fred at all?
You know, we never talked about it. I'll be open and say
yeah.
we didn't necessarily ever address it. I'm sure that if I ever said anything to him, that he would probably give me his opinion on it.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the college game.
Yeah.
I just, you know, being a former student athlete, growing up in a college town, mm-hmm. I like it. It. Maybe if I had a little bit, like Charlie had a real connection to the NBA, and Charlie does an extremely, you know, a great job there in his role, but Charlie had that NBA experience.
Yeah.
You know, I've never done that before, and maybe I would enjoy it if I did, but I like, you know, my kids in that age group of 17 to 22, 23, 25 for DeAndre Kane. But
yeah. Jeez, yeah. Do you remember him and Monte? They were like 7 years
yeah,
apart or whatever
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, so people would be like, that's your dad. Your dad said to come on through.
And Monte was so little at the time.
He was. It did look like big brother, little brother. But we never directly discussed it. But I do know from talking to those guys, short of not making the playoffs this year,
yeah.
I think they really enjoyed it.
Good.
And Nate, as a guy who's a Chicago Cubs fan, a Chicago Bulls fan, you know, just a big Fred Hoiberg fan. I think for him, you know, it's his dream job.
Living the dream.
Yeah, and then for Charlie, just an opportunity to be, you know, in the NBA. So I'm happy for those guys, and we do all still stay in touch because we do have this connection. It's fun because we're not rivals.
Yeah.
You know at other NCAA schools.
It's,
so it's fun.
I know those guys are keeping an eye on Iowa State too.
Yeah.
When you guys were at Kansas State this year, you picked up the big win on the road. Was your first league game or second?
Second win. Okay. Yeah, we were 1-3 going into that game.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot.
Had to have that.
Yeah,
had to have it.
That was a big one. I was at Chicago. And
okay.
I got together with Charlie and we watched the game, and it was fun for me to watch him watch the team he used to be a part of.
Of course.
And I saw how hard him and Nate and, you know, Fred was cheering for you guys throughout the time. I appreciate you stopping in, man.
Oh, thanks for having me.
This has been awesome. I feel like we could do this for 2 hours.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You got any hot takes on the big game tonight? The NBA, have you been watching the NBA playoffs?
I have, just as a true fan, just in, you know, sitting back and enjoying it. My daughter's 8 years old, so she likes it. She likes to kind of talk through some of the things that are, you know, that are going on. But it's just it's exciting to watch basketball, you know, at that level. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens with Golden State with their backs up against the wall tonight.
I like OKC. Yeah. I don't know about tonight, but in the series, man, they're just at a whole new level.
That's the thing. You know, they've been doing different things. You know, so I was talking to someone yesterday. The big difference between our game and theirs are that, you know, when we play in the NCAA tournament, when we were getting ready to play Arkansas Little Rock, you know, we were able to watch them play in person, and you scout them, and you see them, and then you play them. When you're in the NBA, not only do you scout them and you see them, but you play them, and then you play them, and you play them, and you play them.
Yeah.
And so you start to pick up on people's tendencies, and it's different than when you're in Philadelphia one night and you're beating up on those guys, and you go down to Orlando and Miami, and then you fly off to New Orleans, and then you go home and have a homestand. You don't get that feel for people. But in the NBA game, you can really start to see the tacticians, you know, the coaches are, but then also what the players pick up on tendency-wise, because things that guys were getting in game one, they're not getting them anymore. And I think that goes for the coaches as well as the players. So that is fun to watch when there's a series involved.
Do you ever have a run-in with Billy Donovan, being a Florida guy? I mean, I know he probably came a little bit later.
He did.
When you were there.
He came later. I did work his basketball camps after, you know, when I initially got into, you know, coaching basketball at the junior college level. So I worked his camps, and he was always gracious and really nice, very intense. But I'm happy to see him having success there. I'm happy to see, you know, Oklahoma City having success. Yeah. It's fun.
And I'm glad, because I'm like you, I'm a college guy.
Right.
I'm glad to see a college coach go in there and have immediate success.
For
because
sure.
There's that stigma. You know, we've seen Calipari, we've seen Patino fail.
Right.
Right now, a lot of people think Fred's going to do the same thing. I've got faith that he'll turn it around.
Absolutely.
But it's cool for me to see the college guy go in there and win immediately.
Me too. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, how you present yourself when you go in there. And I think Fred has that. We'll have that rapport with his guys going forward. I think there was just so much going on with their roster, you know, this year, with the difference, you know, such a contrast in
their
styles.
So old, but,
and I think once they start to get, you know, guys around them that Fred's more comfortable with, and vice versa, that they're comfortable with him, I think that they'll, you know, really take off. And I look forward to watching them. But it is fun to see Brad Stevens and those, because fun because they're still kind of synonymous with college basketball.
Absolutely.
So it's fun for us, you know, college basketball folks to say, hey, that's one of our own out there having success.
Yeah, it's awesome. Micah, thanks, man.
Thank you.
You're the man. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I know that people are going to love this podcast. Micah Byers from the Iowa State basketball staff. He's a good golfer too. Don't let him kid you. Thank you to AgriGold, our presenting sponsor, as always. We'll be back next week. So long, guys.